You're going to provide everything that child needs, a home, volunteers, and there is no cost to the state. That's the beauty of it. We're just lavishly loving on people. Love and grace are transformative, and we don't have to beat anybody over the head with anything. We just want to love them.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. Today, we get to talk to Rhonda Paulson. She's the founder and executive director of the Isaiah 117 House. Isaiah 117 House is a nonprofit that Jim and I are greatly involved in. A friend of mine from high school actually started one in a bordering county to us. And I would just love for you to listen to this podcast and learn what an Isaiah 117 house is, why it matters to us, what our journey with foster care looked like, and how you can help. Rhonda and her husband, Corey, have a funny story that probably sounds very much like how any of us end up in beautiful messes. And she has such a great personality and such a great heart. She's really fun to listen to. We had a great time together. She runs the nonprofit full-time now. She was on a show with Mike Rowe. That's an awesome story too. So would love for you to give a listen and enjoy.
Hey, Rhonda. It's so good to see you.
Good morning. It's so good to see you. I wish I was in Florida. I can tell you that.
We miss having you here. We got to find another week to bring you back down.
Isaiah said, do you remember that house we stayed in with the pool that I got in every morning? I wish we lived there. I was like, oh, I do too, buddy.
Me too. I know there's lots of people here that wish you lived here.
Yeah. You're a bad neighbor. That's for sure.
So fun. We'd have to cut a hole in the fence.
That's right. That's right.
A little hobbit hole for the kids. So you were just, I guess, where to begin, right? I would just love for
you to start from the beginning.
Yeah, we're going to start from the beginning.
Story. I want our whole community to know exactly what this is all about. Yes. It's too incredible not to share.
It's always so hard when someone comes on the podcast that's become a friend, because I'm like, there's so many things, you know, I get so flustered on where to begin. But Rhonda, you started something so impactful and powerful and meaningful, Isaiah 117 House. And now Isaiah 117 houses, so many of them, which is really exciting. Will you tell us what Isaiah 117 House is and how God dropped this into your heart?
Yeah, I tell people all the time, Isaiah 117 House came out of lived experience. In 2014, I knew nothing about the foster care world, case managers, any of that. But Corey and I both felt strongly that God was calling us to foster care. It didn't make any sense. It didn't make sense to our family or our friends. Even our church family was like, you're going to do what? Isn't that like God to call us into something that doesn't make sense? And so we started off
prepared for.
Exactly. Because he's going to do it. And so if we're totally prepared, how's he going to, we'll be in his way. So we dipped our foot in just by attending classes. And I would challenge anyone listening that if you felt like maybe we should check out foster care, just take the classes. There's no commitment. You're just learning. No one's going to call you the day after you finish your class and drop a baby in your lap. It doesn't work that way. And so just take the classes.
Except it did kind of work that way for you and for us.
Well, okay.
There's exceptions, right, Rhonda?
There are exceptions.
Yes. I mean, going back to it, God does have a great sense of humor. But I would love for you to share the great idea you had on how to get Corey to these classes.
So, yeah, my husband is really easygoing and lets me have my way about everything, but he was not excited about this. And so I found out the classes were happening. They were at a church we were familiar with. And so I made a kind of bold move. I do tell people you should know your man before you try this. I feel like I knew my man 20 years. And so I asked him to go on a date. And so we went out to eat. And when we got done, I said, want to drive out to Crossroads Christian Church? And he was like, on our date? And I'm like, yeah, won't it be fun? And we pull in the parking lot. The parking lot was full. He was like, well, lots of people dating at the Crossroads Christian Church. I know. And that's how we found ourselves in foster care classes. We were on a date. He was not happy.
Do what? Go ahead. Sorry. I just didn't want the story to end there. I was going to say, and I love how you said y'all didn't speak after the first four. You just drove home. He kept showing up, but y'all didn't speak.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. He was so mad. He was so frustrated. I really thought we were going to get kicked out of class. Like, I thought they were like watching us. They're like, not those two. They clearly have marital issues they need to work through. And we did not speak at all the whole way home that first week. We did not speak on the way week two. He didn't say he wouldn't go, but we did not speak. We did not speak on the way home from week two. We did not speak on week three until we were coming home week three. And he said, I don't want to do this. And I said, I mean, I get it. You know, like, this is huge. And he was like, I love safe and predictable. And nothing we have learned in 3 weeks about foster care sounds safe or predictable. And I don't want to do this. But now I know the numbers. And now I know the statistics. And now I know that we have the means, the home, the love to give. And there are children that just need that. Like, they just need a home, Rhonda. Like, we got to do this. And so that was the beginning of Isaiah 117 House, but I didn't know it yet. That was week three of foster care training. And then week seven of foster care training, they took us to a Department of Children's Services. I think in Florida, it's called DFACS. Every state, it's called something different. But they took us to our Department of Children's Services. And we were sitting in a really dingy, dark conference room. I mean, typical, just think state building. And the gentleman reading that class announced that a little girl had slept in that room the night before. And I was burdened. I mean, my heart broke. I mean, I remember my body having a physical reaction to the idea that a little girl had to sleep on this dingy carpet in this state office. And I got really mad at God in that moment. And I started to yell at him in my mind. And I was like, this little girl's done nothing wrong. Like, she is totally innocent. And she feels alone. She feels forgotten. She feels unseen, unheard, unwanted. Like, who's going to tell her that she's loved and that there's hope and that she's beautiful and that this is not her fault? And sitting in that conference room in Johnson City, Tennessee, I heard God say, these are my children. What are you going to do? And that was the beginning of Isaiah 117 House, but I didn't know it because I told him no. I was like, what am I going to do? I'm a cheer and dance coach. I'm not going to do anything. Like, I'm telling you, creator of all things, you should fix this. I'm not doing anything. And we finished week eight and we basically told him no. And we went back home for almost a year. And it was almost a year to the date. We got a call that a 9-month-old little boy needed a home. And that was the day that I found out that children in our country enter foster care in borrowed outfits with roach infested diaper bags. Like, that was the day that I realized, not in some other land, like, our children enter with nothing but maybe a black trash bag. And that was the day we met Isaiah. And that was the day our life truly changed, because this 9-month-old little boy was about to open our eyes to a world we did not know existed. And God was about to move in a way that I could no longer say no to.
Wow. Isn't that amazing how you just feel it? Like you say, your heart was burdened, you know, and it's mm-hmm. burden that it doesn't go away. It's one of those things that until it's an itch that has to be scratched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I tell people I told God yes. And sometimes I tell the truth, which is I couldn't tell him no any longer. Like, my body wouldn't physically let me say no any longer, even though there were times when my mind wanted to. I could not say no any longer. Yeah.
Such a beautiful testimony, because I think so often we hear those words, we hear those callings, and we're like, oh, but it's so inconvenient. Like, this really, this timing is terrible. Or, oh, but I already had plans. Or, you know, there's so many reasons. Or, like you say, I love it when the first time we saw you speak and just the way in which you emphatically say, I'm a cheer and dance coach. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't know how to build a house and raise funds to do it. And I love that. And so Isaiah 117, how did you find that verse specifically? And what is it?
We felt God's presence in our home stronger than ever when Isaiah entered. And I'm not saying it's Isaiah. This one little sweet lady stopped me one time and she was like, maybe Isaiah really is a prophet. Have you asked him what the Lord has said to him lately? And I didn't have the heart to tell her that I can't get him to stop pooping his pants. But until I do that, I'm not going to ask what the Lord is saying. But I know, I don't feel, I have lived. I know that when you say yes to God, when you say yes to something that's bigger than you, that doesn't make sense, that's inconvenient, that doesn't fit nicely in a box, he shows up and equips you. And that's why we were feeling him so strongly in our home. He was there to equip us for what would be a very hard, beautiful, blessing field, but hard journey. Foster care is not easy.
Beautiful, broken mess.
Absolutely. A beautiful mess. Yes. All of it. But we joked that it was like we had a little prophet Isaiah. And so that led us, we thought we should start reading through the book of Isaiah again. And when we read Isaiah 1:17, it just felt totally different now. You know, this idea that what God is truly asking of his people isn't what we think. And at that time, he was like, it's not these new moon festivals. It's not these sacrifices. They're actually making me sick to my stomach. What I want from my people is for you to do good, seek justice, take care of the widow, and take care of the orphan. And a lot of times people are like, why widows and orphans? Like, why is that? Because it's in Isaiah, it's in James, it's everywhere in the middle. Because God is with the most vulnerable. And widows and orphans were the most vulnerable. And these children that are being thrown into this foster care system, they're the most vulnerable of our society. And so we read that verse, and to us, it was just a family verse. Isaiah was a little boy we were trying to get through foster care with. Isaiah 1:17 was a family verse we were holding on to. This is all this was in 2015. We were still years away from a nonprofit and a house and everything God was about to do. And I look back and I think, wow, we had no idea what was coming. But he can't tell you everything because you won't go.
And when you lift up above it, when you come to the end, and you're nowhere near the end of this story, but when you come to the end and you look back and you think all those little pieces were just preparing you for these grand finales, right? And then God always shows up. He shows up and he shows off, right? He's not just going to be like, I kind of did a little something. He's going to be like, hello.
Yes, absolutely. And I think he is looking for these little scared yeses. And so I look back at all these little scared yeses that we were handing him that were leading up to this moment. That's what he wants from us. He just wants obedience and surrender. And we get in our minds that we'd be safer, like down here, white knuckling it, like we'd be safer holding on to our schedule and our plans, and our up here is like crazy scary, but here, we'll just stay here. And I tell people all the time, I've learned God doesn't love us any less when we're down here and scared to death. And we're saying no, emphatically, he doesn't love us any less. But when we finally let go and we say yes, we get to see a side of him that we won't ever get to discover or experience here. We get to see a side of his heart, and we get to feel a freedom that you can't explain when you're down here and scared, that there's actually freedom in the letting go and saying yes. Yeah.
Stepping out of that comfort zone.
And how did the houses actually start?
Yeah, from verse to house.
No, and I think it's important for everyone to know, you went from Isaiah to also Isaiah's brother.
We did. Yes.
And then all of a sudden you started building houses, which I want you to tell, for other kids who are in need of transitionary comfort of a home.
But which
first? Was it Isaiah's brother or the first Isaiah 1:17 house?
Isaiah's brother came to us in 2017, and we opened our first home in 2018.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, we went from a family of four to a family of six with a brand new baby. I had a full-time job. I mean, you're talking about not convenient. There was no time for any of this, but it was that burden. Like every step of the way, I would learn something new. And so I tell people, like, what I learned between 2015 and 2017, I would not be able to walk away from. Like, we could not act like we didn't know anymore. We knew. Like, and what we would learn is about.
You could have just known, like you said, and you could have. But it would have continued to tug at you, and you would sleep at night, and you would have been like, oh God, you would have been hiding from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will you share some about some of the bigger stats and just points of clarity about foster care that you've shared with us before? I just think it's so important so people understand really the magnitude of this.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what we were just talking about in Nashville this past week. Yeah. So in Nashville, Tennessee, that one city, there are 700 children in foster care. There are only 279 foster homes. And to be in a safe and healthy place, you need at least one foster home per child and 10%. So they need 800 foster homes, and they have 267. But here's what I need people to understand too. That math sounds like, oh my word, it's so broken. How would we ever fix it? We actually have the capacity, because also in Nashville, there are 800 churches.
Wow.
There are 800 churches available, and we need one foster home per church. And all of a sudden, we have solved that part of this problem. Like, we are not so broken that we don't have the capacity. I really believe it's that enough people don't know. They don't know. And so for me, I didn't know. I didn't know any of it. And I'm walking this journey. And what keeps being revealed to me between 2015 and 2017 is removal day. Like, people don't know. They know a child has been removed out of a bad situation. They know a child is being placed somewhere else. They don't know about the in-between. And that in-between is where Isaiah 1:17 steps in, because that in-between is crucial. Right now, on removal day, the most traumatic day a child will ever walk. People don't understand that. Like, they lose everything. Mama, their home, their pets, their brothers and sisters, possibly their school. Like, every part of this child's life falls apart. And that child in that traumatic state goes to a state office to sit and wait. And I'm not talking for 30 minutes. I'm talking 8 hours, 12 hours, 3 days. They sit in an office and they wait. And that whole time, they believe they're in trouble. Their needs are not being met. They think no one wants them. Like, it's all of this. And so they enter foster care believing that, yeah, they're a burden. They're in trouble. No one wants them. And then on top of that, you have case managers who, let me say for the record, are doing the absolute best they can. But they are being asked to do a mountainous paperwork while a traumatized sibling group of three is in their cubicle, crying, wanting their mama, like needing food, needing a bath. There's no bathtub. I mean, it's just pandemonium. And then we have foster parents who we desperately need, but we make it really hard on them because we call them at 1 a.m. and we say, we have a sibling group of three. They have zero possessions. They all have lice. Can we bring them to your home right now? Like, that's what I could not get out of my head between 2015 and 2017. Removal day, that case manager, and that future placement. And so the idea of the home was truly from God. Like, I remember opening my mouth in 2017 and words would come out and I'd be like, that was so good. Like, I don't know. I did. That was good. But this idea of the power of a home, like, what if there was a home? What if when a child is going through that traumatic day, they don't go to a cubicle or a conference room, they go to a home with comfy furniture and a bathtub and a shower and a kitchen if you're hungry and a place set outside and loving volunteers so that when they leave that home, they know their needs will be met. They are not in trouble. They are loved and they've never been forgotten. And what about that case manager who could come into a home and take a breath? Like, you know, when you walk in a home that just feels like you are welcome there, you know, like, come in. We've got your favorite coffee. We've got dinner for you. Take a breath. You are loved. And then that future placement, a home. Come to the home. Meet the child where they feel safe. And while you're there, we're going to fill your car with everything you need. Car seats, twin bed, diapers, formula wipes. Like, we want to set you up for success as you start this journey. We want you to know that you're appreciated. And so it was just a dream of this idea of what if there was a home in early 2017. I tell people all the time, I finally said yes to God in January of 2017, which is 1:17. And I did not plan that, but God is very funny. And my yes was scared and pitiful and half-hearted. I feel like I will do it, but I'm so scared. And then I Googled how to start a nonprofit, because if you want God to have the glory, you put someone totally ill-equipped in charge. So maybe it's your dance coach. And that's really how it started. We started praying and asking for people to be on a board. And we just started dreaming of what if there was a home for children and case managers and future placements? What if there was a home? That was the dream early 2017.
And you've made this dream a reality. You have...
How many Isaiah 1:17 homes are there now?
So we opened our first one in our little hometown here in East Tennessee in June of 2018. Since that time, we now have 8 open homes, 14 under construction, 32 total locations in 6 states, 42 states have reached out in 4 countries wanting an Isaiah 1:17 house. God is showing off. Go ahead. Good.
Oh, no. I want to hear what you say.
Well, I was going to say, I don't do a ton of numbers, but I was telling my board that it was starting to feel heavy because for the longest time, I was the only employee. And they did some math and they were like, we've experienced over a 2,000% growth since the beginning I guess it feels a little heavy, but I'm like, God is going to do it on that scale so that nobody can boast. Nobody does an over 2,000% growth. Nobody can take credit for that. Yeah.
That's amazing. And now some logistics. How does this work? Is that we start talking about things like foster care and the Department of Children and Services. That's a community taxes paid for service. And Isaiah 1:17 is the Bible verse, plain and simple. So how do you blend these two ideas of serving in the way in which you know you need to serve and also just plan that line?
Almost every part of this journey is a look back and went, oh, that's what he was doing. And our slogan is love, you're not alone. We want that child to know it. We want that case manager to know it. And we want that future placement to know it. There is nothing polarizing or political or anything to argue about. Everyone resonates with the message, love, you're not alone. We don't want you to feel alone. Everyone, no one hears that message and is like put off by that or, well, that is the message of the gospel. Like, we're literally serving up the message of the gospel, but in a way anyone can swallow. Because, I mean, God walked in the garden with us. He sent fire by night, and in the middle of the wilderness, he's leading us. He sent his son. He sent his Holy Spirit so that we would know we weren't alone. And now I get to go to the state and say, I know that you are burdened and you are overworked and you are overwhelmed, and we just want to lighten your load. And then they go, how much is this going to cost? And we say, nothing, because God's grace is free. But all we say is nothing. And they say, whoa, 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 you're going to provide everything that child needs, a home, volunteers, and there is no cost to the state. Exactly. Where do we sign? Like, that's about as far as we get. But that's the beauty of it. We're just lavishly loving on people. Love and grace are transformative, and we don't have to beat anybody over the head with anything. We just want to love them. And I think that's why it works. We truly just want to love them, and love is transformative.
And you guys do an incredible job. We've witnessed this here in Duval County. So Danae and I graduated high school together. I love that. I guess an important part to mention too is Mike Rowe came and visited you.
I recommend that show. We've watched it.
Anybody that's not seen it that comes over for dinner, Jim's like, sit down, I'm going to make you cry.
Well, they're like, what is this thing that you guys are helping with? And I said, well, you got to watch the Mike Rowe show of it.
Yes, Mike Rowe, returning the favor.
We cry every time. Yeah, it's very touching. Times.
Although my favorite part is Mike has that dry sense of humor, and when he's arguing with you about how to pronounce diapers, diapers, and you're going diapers, and he's going diapers, and I just love that part.
Well,
dry sense of humor, and then it went into the depth of the importance of what you're doing. So
my daughter's friends love that I got bleeped on TV. They're like, "Your mom got bleeped."
You're saying that women get shit done, right?
Yes,
I know. We have the whole episode memorized. Like, we could go on the road and speak, tell your, I could be like, I'm Rhonda Paulson, I'm a cheer and dance coach.
Well, I'm going to do a plug, not that they need it. Unfortunately, the show's no longer on, but Mike Rowe and his team were as genuine and as kind and as loving as any group of people I've ever met. They wanted to tell this story well. They believed in what we were doing. We felt it from the beginning. And that was back when we thought they were a small documentary company that we didn't know Mike Rowe was involved.
No, and that's very
no.
You didn't really know who Mike Rowe was.
I didn't even know this show existed. I didn't know who he was. No, I knew nothing. But they sent their producers.
Huge by that point. I mean, the show, Dirty Jobs had been monstrous. I mean, that was one of my favorite parts too. I'm going, she's so sweet and she has no idea who this is.
That he showed up and so someone nominated you to be on the show doing good deeds and nominated you multiple times. I think he said it was the only person that had put in that many nominations for the same thing. And
she was the secretary for the Department of Children's Services in Johnson City. Yeah. She nominated me 8 times. Yep.
So, and that show was supposed to air, I believe it was March 16th. And instead it aired the day before.
It aired the week before.
It's important to say the year.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So, yeah. So we were told our episode would air March 16th of 2020. And on March 8th, they called me at like 7 o'clock at night. And they said, your episode is airing tomorrow night. We've moved it up a week. No one knew anything. So we scrambled to get the word out, watch the show, watch the show. We had screening parties planned. We ditched it all because it was like the next day. And so 2 million people watched it on March 9th of 2020. Wow. And on March 13th, the world shut down. And the episode that aired on our original air date, only 10,000 people watched it.
I bet.
Wow. Because everyone was probably glued to other news. And
yeah. Exactly. No. Exactly. It's like God literally like picked us and moved us a week early and just dropped us. It gets unbelievable.
You went from being put in 2 million views where it could have been 10,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could have really hindered the growth. Mm-hmm.
That, oh, yeah.
That 2,000 plus, I mean, mm-hmm. has to be a catalyst for all this.
Oh.
That's how Danae heard about you, right?
Yes. Yeah. The week after our episode, 30 states reached out that next week. Wow. Like 30 states in a week reached out. Yeah, it was a little. And then I'm not saying God, COVID was for us. I'm not saying that. I'm also not saying it was for my daughter whose ACT score no longer counted. I'm just saying she's real cute. And it was good. But I am saying we now had 2020 to sit and think, what did he even do? Like, what has he done with these open homes? How do we make this scalable? How do we make this to where we can just move forward at whatever speed God is calling us to move forward to? Like, we had a year that we were just locked down, writing up what he'd been doing. How are we going to do this? And it was so needed, for sure.
That's incredible.
That's so amazing. And now in Florida, we've been in process of one home for mm-hmm. over a year now, right? Are we?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah.
Baker County just opened one. Didn't
kicked
you?
Off.
Kicked off.
Baker County just kicked off. And don't tell Danae. We've said we weren't going to tell her. They were given land yesterday. We've decided if they cut the ribbon first, it's going to be a real hush hush. Like Jacksonville will never know.
We're gonna like hide it. Oh, look at Baker County.
Oh, it's so exciting.
And
so
then there's exciting. Other Florida counties rolling out shortly behind that. So it's just
we have
to see it all happen.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to go back to, you said, you know, how do you think it's been able to be Isaiah 117 and work with the state? One thing I felt like God was telling me early on is don't put a colon in there. Like, don't put Isaiah 1:17, just put Isaiah 1:17, like a house number, 117. I think that's helped us get our foot in the door. I didn't know why. I just felt strongly there wasn't supposed to be a colon. And then the other thing I realized, because one of the very first big speaking engagements I had, I was in front of an entire group, 500 plus state employees in Nashville. And I just stood up and told my story because it's my story. And I talked all about God and what God was doing. And then I got off and I thought, that's how this is going to work. Nobody can tell me this isn't my story. Like, I'm just telling my story. And so I've been able to go to multiple platforms, all kinds of state organizations, and just tell my story. And I think that is part of the beauty of the model that God has created as well. I'm just telling my story.
I think that's incredibly powerful. And I meant to tell you before we started, I write everything down. So I'm... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just telling my story. I think that's really powerful because you mm-hmm. can't, you're not right. You're not wrong. No. You're not offensive. This is who I am. I'm speaking my truth.
Yeah. And you're a natural saleswoman in the most authentic way.
Thank you. Not in a sleazy way.
No. But in the top business trainings that I've ever been to, they say, tell your story authentically. That's what's going to attract your raving fans, your mm-hmm. clients. And the key word is authentically. You can tell mm-hmm. your story that's, as you said, a bait and switch. You are so authentic and into it and living it. I mean, it's tough not for people to not want to get involved. We watched it. It's fantastic to watch the camaraderie and the desire to say, well, this is fantastic. How do I help? Mm-hmm. It's been inspiring to watch, really.
A really cool thing that I don't get to share with many people. When I was in my early 20s, I got invited to speak to a youth group. Now, keep in mind, I have no credentials. I don't know why I got asked. I said, okay, I went. There were some youth ministers there that did ask me to speak at their youth group and then their youth camp. And at some point I said to God, if you ever ask me to speak, I will go. I just remember saying that in like my mid-20s. And I spoke to youth groups probably till early 30s. And then I had a women's group reach out. And once again, I have no credentials. Like, I'm just going. Now, keep in mind, I've went some crazy places. I remember one time a nursing home asked me to do stand-up comedy. And I was like, I don't do stand-up. But anyway, I went. Anyway, it's a long story. So all through my 30s, I was speaking to women's groups, women's retreats, women's conferences. And then in my early 40s, starts Isaiah 1:17. And I now know it was all for this. Like all of that was for this moment so that I can go into a church and speak 5 minutes or 7 minutes or 20 minutes or like it was all preparing me for this. And I just think that that is beautiful. And that is how God is wanting. He does it with all of us. He does it with all of us. And it's just amazing how he works.
Love it.
That's really powerful. All of those pieces are just their steps toward that greatest good and your greatest moment to shine. And really and truly you do shine. And I know that it's not the Rhonda show. I know that it's like coming through you, but you do shine. You have really stepped up and it's very admirable. It's very challenging almost to like other, you know, like, okay, so what am I doing and where can I step in? And where can people, what is the greatest need that you see right now in Isaiah 1:17 house? Like anybody listening, like where is a place to start helping? Where are they needed?
The greatest need is not Isaiah 1:17. The greatest need is foster parents. And it's a big ask and it's a hard ask. And I tell people it is the craziest roller coaster I ever got on with like the highest highs and the lowest lows and turns you didn't know were coming. But I just believe it because I have seen Jesus is in the mess. And if we try to avoid the mess of this life, we will miss him. Like he is in the mess. And so when you step in and say, I'm willing to be in this mess with you, Jesus, lead me. It's beautiful. It's hard, but it's beautiful. And there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of children across this nation with nowhere to go. Currently, every one of our open homes, every one of our homes has an open home section and then also a visitation space. Every one of our homes and every visitation space currently has children in it with literally nowhere to go. And I'm talking, they've been there for 30 days, 20 days, and they know no one wants them and their children. Yeah, we need foster parents. That's number one. But if that feels daunting, and it should, by the way, if you're scared to death, you're primed to go take the class. But I do believe that if there's an Isaiah 1:17 house in your community, get involved. We need volunteers in every way, shape, and form. If you're listening to this and you're like, oh my word, we need this. I don't even know if we have it. Try to find us. If we're not there, reach out to us. We'll talk you through the process of how to go about starting one. Because I have seen that people that are really scared, they come into an Isaiah 1:17 house, they volunteer as a caregiving volunteer. So they're in there with the child. Your whole focus is to love on that child. I always say we're like the fun aunt. Like we're just there to love and party and make slime on somebody else's table and carpet, go home when it's over. And all of a sudden it's like the veil is lifted and they're not scary anymore. They're children. Like what people forget is children in foster care. They're on your kid's soccer team. They're sitting beside your daughter in second period. They are just children who desperately need adults to step into their life and speak truth and life over them. And so volunteer in an Isaiah 1:17 house and see if that veil's not lifted for you. And like I started, just take the classes. Just take the classes, get informed. Even if they hand you a baby, once you get approved, you're not approved the day you leave classes. There's still home studies and all, like, you've still got time.
Although in our case, we cut the line and then some because we took the class and we got the call from Danae. This is literally 2 weeks into the pandemic when everything's on complete lockdown.
One of my Christmas presents, just to share a touch of our story. So my grandmother passed away in our home with hospice. And when she passed, I was like, ooh, I can love things that leave. I must need to be a foster parent. He's like, wait, what? These lines do not, what are you talking about? I'm like, that was really hard. That was like the hardest thing I did. And I accepted her knowing she was leaving. And that's like foster care. So like, we should do foster care. That's what she left me with. He's like, okay. So then convincing a busy entrepreneur that already has four children to go 9 weeks or whatever many weeks it is on however many hours a night. So I found a woman that was willing to cram all of those weeks into one afternoon.
We took a crash course.
We took a private pride class because I knew I had one shot. I said to him, I was like, this is my Christmas. This is all I want for Christmas. And he was like, but just because I go doesn't mean we're going to do this. And I'm like, okay, but just go. And we're in there. He's asking, I mean, it is just like Can you imagine? 8 weeks. It was like trauma processing. It was visual. I mean, so much coming through him. And he was like, he didn't leave there saying, we've got to do this. But it was kind of that same quiet ride. Like there was lots going on. And then our family is a blended family already. Jim adopted our two oldest boys. And we had a very traumatic situation coming into our existence as a blended family. So much of it spoke true, even in our own family. And so, gosh, but yeah, so that was Christmas. And then March, we got handed two sweet babies for about a year. And it was broken and beautiful and messy. But I think it revealed things to each and every one of us about ourselves, about our path, about forward moving, about all of the things that you're saying. And it was truly terrifying and the most rewarding thing I've ever done. You know what I mean? Like incredible. And it also revealed to me the love that my husband held for our two older boys. Cause I thought, wow, this is a magic kind of love, to love something as much as you possibly can, no matter its story or where it's origination. So anyways, I didn't mean to make that as long as I did, but
oh, no.
Powerful. And we've never really shared that.
Well, I think like you said too, what you guys went through and wow, now we've seen it. Listening that afternoon class, there was something that hit me, and this is really strong. She told us about this little boy who had been put in foster care and then but fostered to adopt for permanency. And the little boy was returned after like 6 weeks, and they could not understand the social work. Was he bad? Was he misbehaved? Was he not this? There was one problem, Ron, and that was he wasn't comfortable calling the new adoptive parents mom and dad yet. And that's why they returned him. And I'm going, and this is where I'll say, you dumbasses. This is where my fire came in. It's like, I'm going to do the right thing and say, don't you know that those names might not have a good point to them right now? Right now. I know with my youngest, my oldest, when I came in at 7 and 5, they said, well, what do we call you? I said, you call me Jim or whatever you want. I'll love you just the same. So dad was never forced. And that was something that I think it took about maybe a year to 2 years, and they chose to do it. But I don't know why I tell you that, but for some guys out there, I heard that and I got so angry in a way that I wanted to change that anger into doing what was right. Because this poor kid, when it's going, look, there's so much we don't understand. Yeah, those words might not have the same meaning to them as it does to us.
Oh, yeah.
One big aha that I got from that. And I said, I think sometimes the way to motivate me is to agitate me. And it works. So,
well, it's interesting because I meet a lot of men who say, oh my word, I can't believe you told that story. I'm going to end up on a date. You know, that's a lot of times it's the woman pushing about this. Sure. And several men have confessed to me, like they said, I don't honestly believe I can love a child that's not mine. Like, I think it sounds great in theory. I had this one guy, I'd spoke in front of this group, and when I got done, I did Q&A, and he said, can I ask you something and you will answer me honestly? And I said, I will answer you honestly about anything you ask me, except my weight. Go. And he said, okay. He said, do you actually love Isaiah and Eli like you love your own? And I said, I wish my husband was here to answer this for you, because it is unbelievable and magical and from God, because you do. Like, you love them, and you can't love a child halfway, and they are yours, and you absolutely love them the same. But you don't really know that until you experience it. And so I said, I wish my husband was here to tell you. He did not believe it. And he is now a believer. Yeah.
I'm going to send you something, Rhonda. I actually had an article go viral years ago because I wrote it called The Second Place Myth of Adoption. Because I get to stand on the same side as you of being an adoptive parent and a biological. And after my daughter was born, I wrote this reflection piece saying, once you love a child and go all in, the imaginary lines of biological and adoptive disappear, and there's no difference.
Because there were so many bravado males telling him, oh, it's going to be so different when you hold
when
your
own child.
At least
when you have your own child. And it kind of insulted me adopted. And also, I think it's also inspiring for people where I know some friends and people around us that can't have children. And I'm saying, if you think you're taking the second place route, I've gone both routes. And I'm telling you, both are like you just described. And I think that's an important message that you are showing and living. I know we are too, that, man, you're missing out. It is not a second place route. And there is no difference. That line, it just kind of gets erased off the chalkboard.
Well, what's funny is our daughter, Maggie, She went through a period of time of being very upset that she wasn't adopted. She wanted to be chosen. She was like, you didn't choose me. She's like, are you sure? She went through a period of time. Are you sure I'm not adopted? How come? Like, she was very offended that the chosen ones are the favorites because they get to be chosen.
That's awesome. I heard a woman say one time, I have 4 children. 2 are biological or 2 are adopted, but I can't for the life of me remember which is which. And I thought, I'm going to start saying that. Like, it's true.
Love that. It's
true. Yeah, I do too. I
really love that.
Well, how can people learn more about you? We're going to include the Mike Rowe Show in the show notes so that people can watch it. I highly recommend that. Where can people learn more about you, Isaiah 117?
Yeah, just go to Isaiah117house.com. Our website has every state that we're in, our locations, our history, how we got started, ways that you can contact us and get involved. And then I joke that in 2017, I'd never been on the Facebook. And it was true. I never got on the Facebook. I still don't enjoy it. I feel like it's showing me I'm not living my best life. And so I try to avoid it. But we now have like 32 Facebook pages. So pretty much every county we in has Isaiah 117 House Duval or Isaiah 117 House Knox, you know. And so you can find us on social media, Instagram, and local counties have Facebook pages and then our website.
That's wonderful. And I know our local one, which we do have a lot of local listeners. Everything from an Amazon wish list to days in which you can physically go out and sell t-shirts. And one day there'll be a day to swing a hammer. So I encourage all of our local people to make sure that they are abreast with that goodness. So thank
you. Yes, for sure. For sure.
For serving, for being a light, an example. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Oh, it's been so much fun. Thank you all. It's been such a pleasure meeting you all. And I can't wait till we can sit together in real life again.
Yes, we look forward to that.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.